a very happy Friday to you, and I hope you have a joyful weekend and a marvelous Lord's Day with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation. If you don't have a place where you go and worship and fellowship and pray and praise and serve in that fashion, you need to go out there and find a place where you can do all of that. If you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we invite you to come and be part of our fellowship. And even if you want to come for a visit from your own home church, feel free to do that. Make sure you introduce yourself to me as one of my Radio Bible students. I'd love that. Fridays, I also try to say a thank you to those who are supporting Into the Word financially. Anyone that would like to join in those efforts, it's easy enough to do. Just write down the contact information. You'll hear it today at the end of today's program. Then you can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount whatsoever to that address, and it will be applied to the radio broadcast fees. Thanks for taking care of that important task. Open to Revelation chapter 13 and Daniel chapter number 7. Because this is one of the places that we need to take the information from the Old Testament to help us better understand the information in the New Testament. John is currently seeing a vision about a long war against the seed of woman and the seed of the dragon. That war started in the Garden of Eden between Adam and Eve and the serpent. And God said at the time that he was going to put a state of enmity or warfare between these two groups, and that eventually the seed of woman would crush the head of the serpent even as the serpent struck him on the heel. And we very clearly apply that prophecy of Genesis 3:15 to the atonement of Jesus and how it broke the power base of Satan on planet Earth. But the war was not over yet. The war continued to go on for a long time after that. Paul even tells us in Ephesians chapter 6 that our struggle, our current struggle, is not against flesh and blood people. People are sometimes very irritating and can even be lethal, but they're not the problem. It's the principalities and powers. It's the demonic angelic forces of the heavenly realms that are trying to run this world. The prince of the power of the air being at the head of that group. That's the war that we're still in right this moment. But the book of Revelation chapter number 12 portrays that that war is going to come to its ultimate climax when Satan and his fallen angels are booted out of the spiritual dimension, the invisible dimension, into our world. And that will happen in connection with the kickoff of the final 3.5 year day of the Lord, when the sun goes dark, the moon goes blood red, and the stars, which is poetic for angels, will fall from the heavens. And so that will be the beginning of the final battles of this great war. And Satan will know that he's got very little time, 3.5 years. And so we were reminded last session that he'll first try to wipe out a limited group that's in the immediate vicinity, I think, of the lower Middle East, there in the Promised Land. The woman, as is portrayed, but she is going to be protected by the two witnesses and taken off, apparently, to the Temple Mount, and there be out of the firing line of Satan. No matter what he tries, he can't quite get them. So He goes off in a fit to wage war against the rest of that woman's offspring, which would be believers. Believers in the love of God, the love of mankind, and the testimony of Jesus as the atoning sacrifice for our sins and the glorious resurrected Lord that has ascended on high and he's coming again. And chapter 12 ended with the dragon marooned here on planet Earth with his fallen angels. And he's standing on the sand of the sea. And then John starts describing a vision that's related to the dragon. Now remember, the dragon was already described as having seven heads. And so now we see a beast rising up out of the sea, which I believe is the Mediterranean. And this beast has ten horns and seven heads. As we develop this information, we'll find out that the ten horns are actually on the seventh head, not on any of the others, because it'll be the more significant head for our purposes. And there are ten diadems on its horns, so kingly ornamentation. And these horns will later be referred to as the ten kings. And it has blasphemous names on its heads. So these are names in opposition to the true name, He Who Is, and He Who Is Salvation. The beast was like a leopard, apparently in its body shape and form. Its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth were like a lion's mouth. So that's the description of this great beast coming up out of the sea. We'll decode those animal descriptions in just a moment. But remember, the last part of verse 2 is, the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So the dragon is the one that helps this beast come to power. And he's using him like a puppet, which is probably why the beast looks like the description of Satan here in this passage. Now, before we read any farther in Revelation 13, let's go to Daniel chapter 7, where we see the exact same descriptors. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay in his bed, and then he wrote the dream out and related the following summary of it. And so we can have a sense that this is toward the end of Babylon's control, because Belshazzar will be the guy that is the final prince on the king, or prince upon the throne in Babylon city. So Daniel describes it in this way. I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Now, the great sea is the way that the people of the ancient Middle East referred to the Mediterranean, which is another reason why I think that's the one we're talking about. Four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. So there's the lion in our story. And I kept looking until its wings were plucked. Now that's interesting. This winged lion gets its wings clipped. And it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail as to why I'm going to make these associations with certain historical governments. You can go to my Living the Last Days Prophecy seminar notes, which will be in the PDF resources section on intotheword.net, and you can read some of my more detailed reasons for this. But effectively, in the time of Daniel, the Babylonian Empire had kind of a goddess that was taking care of them in their mind. And this goddess was represented by winged lions. Her name was Ishtar. And we know this, for one, because when Nebuchadnezzar was building the great city of Babylon, he was decorating the Ishtar Gate with winged lions. So this was a symbol for Daniel to understand, representing Babylon and how it was going to be kind of boiled down to one guy that will have his wings clipped. That guy was Belshazzar, and Babylon will fall thanks to Belshazzar. So that's all predicted there in that imagery. Now, verse 5, "Behold, another beast, a second one, resembling a bear. It was raised up on one side, three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth, and thus they said to it, arise, devour much meat." The bear is representative of the Medo-Persian Empire, which overran the Babylonian Empire and replaced it, absorbed it, if you will. Now, why a bear? Well, bears were apparently quite common animals representing strength in Persia and in Media. But it is interesting that this bear is lopsided. It's raised up on one side. One side is taller than the other, which matches exactly what we see in another of Daniel's visions with a lopsided ram, where one horn comes up bigger than the other. And so that's exactly what happened with the Medo-Persian Empire. It started as a Mede Empire, a Median Empire, but the Babylonians soon kind of overwhelmed their partners and became the key players in it. And so that is why, with great confidence, I can say that the bear here is the Medo-Persian Empire. Verse number 6, "After this I kept looking, behold, another one like a leopard," so that's our third animal, "which had on its back four wings of a bird. And the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." Now, leopards are thought of about being very fast. Birds with a couple of wings are pretty quick as well. Give them four wings, that makes them even faster. And four heads kind of makes it more ferocious. This animal symbolizes the Macedonian Greek Empire of Alexander the Great, which sped at unprecedented advance across the ancient Middle East during the 330s and into the 320s. And it was taking over all the ancient territory of Babylon, which in turn had been taken over by the Medo-Persians. So all of the stuff was taken over by the Macedonian Greeks under Alexander the Great. It's interesting, in my notes for Living Last Days Prophecy Seminar, I have a picture of a floor, I wanted to say fresco, but that's not right, mosaic. It's made up of little tiny rocks. It's a floor mosaic from the hometown of Alexander the Great. And he is represented riding on a leopard, coming back from the Middle East with all sorts of wealth and booty. And so his home area was celebrating how he came back riding on a leopard. Now, that's actually related to a Greek myth about Dionysius, who had, as a god, gone from Greece out to the Middle East and had picked up all sorts of things, including the making of wine, and brought it back as a gift to the Greek-speaking peoples. And guess what? He came back on a chariot pulled by four leopards. So I think we can say with great confidence this vision that Daniel saw was about the progression of the different empires that the Jewish people were being impacted by. First, the Babylonians in Daniel's day, followed by the Medo-Persians in the days that immediately followed, and during which they were able to go back to their promised land, and then finally how the Macedonian Greeks under Alexander the Great came into the region and kind of took everything over and changed it into their image and likeness. Verse 7, after this, I kept looking in the night visions. Behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, extremely strong. It had a large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So now we are matched up with the Revelation 13 passage, because this last beast represents Rome coming in to the picture. It overwhelmed all the region of the Macedonian Greeks, which of course included the region of the Medo-Persians, which of course included the region of Babylon. And so all that was taken over by the time of the first century AD by the Romans. And the Roman Empire continued to grow, but eventually became unstable and kind of broke apart. And we've got Europe and all its different kingdoms that come into existence after the Roman Empire kind of falls apart. But they keep a lot of their Romanness, and they keep trying to reassemble the empire. You think about how Charlemagne tried to put it back together again. And then later we've got Napoleon. He's trying to put back together the Roman Empire. We've got the Nazis under Adolf Hitler trying to put the Roman Empire back together. The Third Reich under him would be a revival of the Roman Empire with all the Aryan ideals that he placed on it. So really, we are still living today in the time period of verse number 7, which is why chapter 13 of the book of Revelation is following that same descriptor, where you've got kind of leftover bits and pieces of the previous empires. So the beast of Revelation 13, it's got the body of the leopard. And so that's a bit of the Greeks. And we have Greek ideals in our modern day Western society. Got the bear's feet. And we still have a lot of Medo-Persian things as well that are left in Western society. Legal system being kind of one of the things that was impacted by that. And then the mouth of the lion. Well, one of the things about the Babylonian Empire was its braggadociousness and the fact that it thought that it could do all things better than anyone else. And so we still have a little bit of the Babylonian systems. One of the reasons we do, 60-minute hours and things of that nature and is because of ancient Babylonian influence. And the Romans, there's no doubt we're still impacted by the Romans. What do we call the name of our governing body that has 100 leaders in it? We call it the Senate, which is straight out of Roman legal principles. And when you go to Washington, D.C., you see an awful lot of iconography, symbolisms and architecture that's taken straight out of both Greek and Roman influences. Because a lot of the folks here in the United States during its formative years kind of thought of this country as being New Rome. So that's the deal that we're going to have to understand, is that in Revelation 13, the Roman Empire is still kind of moving forward in a brand new form. In fact, I believe that's exactly what's happening with Satan. He is bringing his former puppets all together into one more attempt to control the world. That's this dragon out of the sea. The government, probably centered on the Mediterranean basin, just like all the previous ones touched on the Mediterranean basin. I think this final world government, use world in quotations here, is going to be centered or touching upon the Mediterranean basin. Now, verse 3 of our Revelation 13. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound. So it looked like one of the seven heads looked like it had been killed. But its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. Now, I believe that that is going to be another way of describing the idea that this beast comes up out of the abyss. It had gone down into the abyss and came back up out of the abyss. The abyss is the place of chaos, of disorder, of even death in a way. And so what happened over the years for the Roman Empire? Well, it kind of fell apart. They kept trying to bring it back together, but it never quite got it done. But eventually, maybe something similar to it kind of takes form. Maybe like, I don't know, maybe the European Economic Community, for example. That is sometimes been promoted as an attempt to get the Roman way of doing things back together, to bring unity back to the ancient countries of the Roman Empire. Or maybe even a little bit of NATO influence there as well. Between the European Economic Community and NATO, you're pretty much covering a lot of the Western Empire of the Romans. But here's the deal. Whatever has come about when the final 3.5 years begins, when the sun goes dark, the moon goes blood red, the stars are falling from the sky, that chaos knocks it all back down again, effectively kills whatever government existed at that moment. Kicked it in the head, stabbed it in the head. But what John is seeing described here is that what looked like was dead is then brought back to life. It still looks like it used to look, but it is a different one, which is why we're almost out of time today, but when we get around to using the decoding information in the book of Revelation itself, chapter number 17, that there this seventh head that exists at the beginning of the final 3.5 years but is killed, it comes back up again with its 10 horns and its 10 diadems on those horns. And it gets counted as an eighth head, and yet it's still the seventh head. So don't get too confused by that idea. It's basically a resurrected government, very quickly brought back into existence again. And then that head the resurrected seventh head or the eighth head of the beast is the one that belongs to the beast leader. And he's the one at the prompting of Satan will try to wipe out anyone and everyone that opposes his rule and might be a supporter of Jesus because he hates anything related to Jesus. Now, one other thing that I just want to throw out there for you to chew on. We're doing a lot of speculation because that's what you do when you consider predictive prophecy. I wonder whether or not something similar happens to the human being that becomes the beast leader. There is something that makes him come to prominence. And so I wonder whether or not in the chaos of the breaking of the sixth seal and the sun going dark, the moon going red, and the stars, the angels falling from the sky, and all the chaos that ensues from that, whether or not he gets hurt, wounded in the head, and that Satan somehow helps him come back to physical ability, and that this adds to his mystique and why everybody is intrigued with him being the leader of this new resurrected government. Because I think verse 4, which is where we're going to close today, Revelation 13, 4, might apply to both the government and the leader of the beast kingdom. They worshiped the dragon, that's Satan, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" So if you've got a supercharged government that comes back to life quick, and you've got a supercharged leader at the head of that government that has even come back to life, how can you fight against that?